Please note that the information and advice provided via the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed or substituted for professional medical advice, counselling, or any other type of therapy or professional advice. I do not provide specific medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And if you have any concerns about a medical condition, please consult with your GP or other qualified healthcare provider. Please do not disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking it because of something you've heard whilst listening to this podcast. Hi everyone, I'm Rada.
And I'm Giles.
And we're your trusted guides for the Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast. The podcast that helps you remember, relearn, rediscover and be inspired by others about what might help you feel good on this journey that we call life.
And we're starting right now on our journey to discover those things you forgot were good for you and inspire you to remember them. So without further ado, let's talk about this week's theme.
Our guest today is Naomi Wilkinson. Naomi is a television presenter, a dancer, and a complete superstar. She's been working non-stop in children's television since 1999, and you'll definitely know her from CBBC and Bite Size. She's also a panto star and is always finding ways to educate and entertain in a fun way.
Naomi Wilkinson, thank you so much for being on our podcast. It's so lovely to see you. And obviously, you know both of us, which is unusual when we have this podcast.
Well, this is an people, absolute joy. Get to see both your faces and
joy
chat.
To see you. Because often we neither of us know the person, or one of us knows the person and the other person doesn't. So it's nice that we both know who you are and that we are friends of you. And we've and both met you in real life, which is another thing that I don't get to do that often, meet people in real life.
Well, and both connected through social media first and then met each other in person after.
I know, and we're so down on social media, but look, you can make friends.
Yeah.
I was going to say, we're basically an advert for the positive side of social media, aren't we, basically?
That's what this podcast episode is all about.
Totally. But I think I came across you on social media. I mean, I think through our work in with children and children's TV and broadcasting, but initially. But I remember coming across your account and just being like, wow, just being blown away by your energy because you are one of those people who just has such a lot of positive energy and you radiate this just beautiful joy. And I was like, who is this person?
I need to know them.
I need to follow them. They're great. And then when I met you in real life, I was like, well, 100%. Like, she's definitely got that beautiful, beautiful energy. And we were chatting a bit before you came on about how you get that energy. I mean, obviously sometimes it's something we're born with as our personality, but I think also there are elements or choices we make in life potentially about what we do with our time that also kind of encourages that energy to be there. So I was going to ask you as my first question, how do you get that beautiful positive energy?
Well, it's so kind of you to say. I feel completely humbled by that. It's really, really kind, but I feel the same about both of you. I think working in children's telly has got a lot to do with it because I have been channeling my inner child on a daily basis for 20 plus years. So, I think when you have to wear all sorts of costumes and do all sorts of daft things and you literally have no pride left, I think I've just learned to take myself not very seriously, laugh at myself and just try and find the happy and the fun and positives in things. I have been very lucky, so I think that's made a big difference as well. I've had a very, very lovely life so far. I've done lots of lovely things, so I think also I'm very grateful for the opportunities that have come my way and that I think I worked hard to get to. But yeah, I think just counting my lucky stars, really. And I was living a dream. I wanted to be a children's presenter from being really quite little, so it was always a goal. So I think when you get to do something that you've dreamed about doing, then you just kind of feel very thankful, you know, it worked out well.
Yeah. No.
Were you one of those children who kind of like just took their little kind of microphone or recorder, or if it was like tape recorder, and just started pretending you were presenting in?
Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I think like we all did whenever we were cooking and baking a cake, we pretended we were, well, I did. I always pretended I was doing the cookery item on Blue Peter, or if I made a craft item, I'd be pretending I was like Karen Keating or Sarah Green or whoever. Yeah, I did. I just always wanted to be a Blue Peter presenter, really.
Yeah, that's, I just wanted the badge, to be honest. I mean, yes. the amount of competitions I would go into and the like bring and buy sales I probably did. I never got one though.
Did you not? Oh, I might have to send you one.
I'll make you one. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll get crafty.
What, out of a paper mache or something?
Yeah, I did take a photo the day I got given my first badge. I was like, what?
One minute. Whoa. Let's get your first badge.
I've got a few badges because, you know, they've now got different coloured badges.
Yeah.
They've got about 7 different coloured ones. So you've got a green badge if you do wildlife things, and craft on sport ones, all sorts of things. So, yeah, I got a green badge as well.
Oh, my goodness. I just wanted the bog standard.
You made Giles feel even worse.
I just want the bog standard white one. I
feel bad now.
I just wanted a badge. Well, out of my many collection, 20 badges that I have. But I mean, you do so many things, Naomi, don't you? You do like, obviously you do so much work with children, but you do pantomime, you do different performances, you're always out there doing something different with nature or dancing, or like, you know, making up songs to kind of for educational purposes. You do so many different things, and I wonder if that variety is kind of what keeps you going. Is variety important to you, or do you need a sense of routine as well?
No, so important. I think I put it on Instagram the other day, how frustrated I get where social media makes us feel like our account has to be so focused around one thing so that everybody knows what's your brand and what are you talking about and what are you here for. And I love loads of things, so I get really frustrated to feel like I've got to only be one thing. So yeah, that's why I struggle with social media and why my account probably doesn't do very well, because I just go, oh, I'm doing a bit of this today and then tomorrow I'm going to do that. And yeah, my account is all over the place because I do like doing lots of things and I refuse to be put into a little box of I will only enjoy one thing.
Oh, it's so true, because I think that I'm the same, because I do lots of different things. And I guess to us, we probably feel like, oh, we're becoming a jack of all trades, yeah, kind of thing. And that's how we feel that people perceive us. But I remember talking to someone recently who she's a dancer, she's a model, she's an actress, and she's just released a single. And I thought, and she's so kind of happy about where she wants to do all these different things. And it really inspired me to think, actually, I really want to take ownership of the fact that there's a joy in doing all these different things. And if you like doing something, just do it. Like, it doesn't, you know, don't get held back by the idea that, you know, you might not, I don't know, that whether you're like particularly good at one thing and you've got to stick in that one thing, you know, if you enjoy doing something, just do it.
Totally. And I think that, you know, when you said to me this podcast and it's things you've forgot you love doing, it's like, well, where do I start? There's so many things.
Well, that was what we were going to ask you, actually, what that thing, you know, because there are lots of, I mean, we've spoken to loads of different guests over the last sort of four series, and they've all been so different. But a lot of them have had common themes as well. But we were going to ask you what your thing is, maybe for yourself or for people listening, that thing that you think, actually, I wish there was a bit more of that in the world, or I struggle to remember it and I want to remember it a little bit more.
Yeah, I was trying to think. So I was going to do about music composition, because that's something that's come back into my life recently. But I think you did that not very long ago. And I was also, I think it's also dancing with people. Dancing in a class or dancing with a group of people where you're all moving in the same direction to music that you love, all having to concentrate super hard to nail the moves and get the choreography right. It's just something I find so uplifting. So I taught children dancing, and that's what I qualified to do at college, was children's dance teaching, so ballet, tap and all that. But a few years ago, I went back to do all my fitness instructor qualifications. So I now teach Zumba and teach at gyms. And so that was then teaching adults for the first time, which was a whole, I did do an adult tap class years ago. But yeah, that was a long time ago. But this is a whole new ball game of teaching a class which runs nonstop for an hour, and adults respond to you very differently to children. I've worked with children so much over the past 20 odd years, and it's very, very different working with children and adults in a kind of exercise class. And I feel like I've learned loads from doing it, and it's been a fantastic new, well, it was reminding me how much I love dancing with people. And I think lockdown brought that home as well. So it was fun. I was doing dance classes virtually. You joined in, Amrada.
I went, yes, for everyone listening. I did one of Naomi's Zumba classes, which was absolutely amazing because she was wearing a pink tutu.
Yeah.
And I was in my shed and I just was like, oh my God, this is
but
the best.
But what was
thing
Naomi wearing?
I had a little pink tutu. And
no, I meant.
Sorry. 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 Yeah. So I think, and you know, dancing like that was fun and it kept me going through lockdown. But then when you get back into the gym after that, it made me appreciate even more how fun it is to dance with a group of people. And I think it's,
I can definitely relate to actually. So I was gonna say, I do like a step class at my gym, and the instructor is brilliant. She's absolutely amazing. So shout out to Mandy.
Yeah, Mandy.
And my friend, one of my other friends was parking in the car park, and she said last week, she said that she basically could see the back of the studio, which obviously got windows in it, and she could see everyone moving in exact timing, like you said, in the step class to all the different moves. And she said it looked so incredible. She's going to take a picture of it or a video of it because it just looks so wonderful. Yeah. And I wonder if that is that sort of that synchronicity where actually, you know, when sometimes you're in a group of people in a room and everyone's got that same kind of energy, you know, like in a wedding, yeah, when everyone's really happy. Yeah. Or, you know, you can feel other people's energy. And I wonder if there's something about that collective movement and that synchronicity of movement in a group that just raises the energy of dance or rhythm or like connection. I don't know what it is, but there's something really powerful about it.
There is. And it can even be down to just one track within a class. You can find that just something about the energy with the people, everybody is getting the movements, everybody is loving the tune, everyone's in the right mood that day, and something just happens. And sometimes you can finish a routine and it gets a round of applause or makes people feel a bit emotional and you just go, what, that was wicked, something just happened in this room, I don't know how, but all of us together just sort of created this new experience and it was lovely. So and I find exercise quite difficult. I love exercise, but it's because I've always loved dancing and I've always done dancing. So then I find I exercise, but I'm so busy concentrating about what the choreography, I'm not thinking, oh, I'm doing lots of repetitions of this and my body is getting tired and this muscle's working. I never think that when I'm exercising because I'm always doing dancing. And I think the love of exercise comes from finding that thing that you love. And I think group exercise, there's so many different types of exercise you could go and do, you know, where you try and pull massive trucks and huge tires around and that sort of strongman type of exercise. And then there's yoga and hot yoga and Pilates and chill vibe stuff. There's, like you say, there's a spin and there's the step and stuff which uses kit and equipment, or there's kind of body pump. I don't know. There's so many different types. So I think it's just tapping into the one that really suits you. You know, how hard do you want to work? Do you want a class where the instructor just takes it easy on you and you can float around in the back and enjoy yourself, or do you want to be pushed to your sweating buckets and you feel like you're going to be sick because you're working that hard? And I just think there's a class that would suit everybody. You've just got to, you know, some people do outdoor classes, don't they, or it's like going running with the running club in the nighttime. Some people love that. I just think it's finding your group exercise. And yeah, coming back to teaching adults was a huge like awakening for me of like, oh, I love doing this. I've even taught a class of really older people. I've done it, it's kind of a Zumba Gold, but there's been a 90-year-old in
Saga
my
Zumba.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, 80-90-year-olds in the class, wow, doing the whole hour. And obviously the pace is slower and we go at a different level, but
do you know what? Talking about like kind of that communal dancing and stuff. I was in a, I don't get out to the pub very often now, you know, I'm 45, got kids. The pub is like a distant memory.
I know what you mean.
And I went and there was a band playing, and I'm going to caveat this, that I do not like cover bands, right? I'm a bit of a fussy about cover bands. but they were actually pretty good and they played some really interesting stuff. But there was a whole bunch of people there, probably assimilates to me, and they were playing like The Jam and they were playing all sorts of good, some quite cool 80s stuff, and people were getting up and you like, there was such joy, and it wasn't just alcohol induced, it was really just pure joy of getting up and dancing with the music stuff. And there was this old couple who had obviously just gone in for a quiet dinner, and they must have been in like similar age to you're saying, like maybe like late 80s or something,
right?
And it was just so beautiful. They were sort of stood about maybe a foot apart, and she was sort of pivoting like very slowly. This is obviously not very good for the radio, for a radio audience.
It looks but good.
Everyone very slowly pivoting, slightly yeah,
twitching his body.
And then the man, her husband, was just sort of kind of lifting one leg up and then lifting the other leg up and kind of swinging like from side to side. And I mean, obviously the movement was very slow and measured, but it was, they were having the best time. They were doing that to, it was, I Predict a Riot.
Really?
Yeah.
A very gentle riot.
Yeah, it was so funny. Yeah.
Pre-planned it, and everyone goes home at 8 o'clock.
It was just so funny, but yeah, but it was brilliant. And I just thought, oh, that's so nice. They'd like, you know, they've engaged with this, like the music and seeing people dance has like engaged them, and they've got up and they're just having a lovely time, you know.
So
I totally get that. I also think kind of
collective dancing is actually really, it's really helpful for people who struggle with or feel embarrassed of expressing who they are. I mean, we've all been there in terms of like just getting up and dancing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, oh, God. So actually, I think like I went to an Irish wedding, and like they, you know, everyone was teaching, you know, Irish dancing on the dance floor at the wedding. And there's like obviously like line dancing. But I kind of feel like in a way it's really great to have moves that you have to follow, because in that way everyone feels comfortable to get up and have a go, as opposed to just thinking, oh, actually, I'm not going to let that break. Whereas if you have those rules and that kind of collective movements, then everyone seems a little bit more
not self-conscious, are you?
Yeah,
exactly.
And then I think you can also take it to the next level with when you are then with a class, you might go on to do a performance. You might work towards actually showing people what you've done. And then that's a whole different level of dancing with people, where you throw in an adrenaline boost and you're all in it together. And it has this incredible nervousness beforehand, maybe before you go on stage and there's an audience there and there's that buzz and you feel sick. And then you get on there and it's down to all of you to concentrate and work together. And you're all dependent on each other, focusing in that moment and trying to remember everything that you've practiced and not make mistakes. Because in a group of dancers all trying to do the same thing, you stand out like a sore thumb if you go the wrong way. And I think then that feeling of elation afterwards is just something else. It's absolutely brilliant. So I think there's also that level with dancing as a team with people, almost working towards an end goal like that, can also have another level of enjoyment to it.
Yeah, it's huge. It's huge. And I was just thinking there, like, obviously the crux of the base of all this is music, and music's a big part of your life and you love music. I wonder about the wonder of music and how, like, you know, it almost changes our chemistry when you put on like you're saying, when a tune hits, and you get it, and it's just, and I wanted to ask you about your kind of, I guess it's a lifelong thing with music for you.
Yeah.
When did you sort of discover that you really love music?
Well, my dad's massively musical. So I grew up in a very musical home. He played the organ at our church for years and years. And he ran lots of choirs and singing groups and stuff that I was always a part of. And I played the French horn at school, and I played the piano at school and the recorder. And I was in the choirs, every choir and every orchestra and band that was going, I was part of it. So there was a lot of learning, studying music and performances, as well as having it played in the house a lot of classical music I grew up with. But I always loved cheesy pop music to dance to. I'd go to my dance classes, and then I'd love dancing to Prince and Michael Jackson and Madonna and all of those sort of tunes as well.
Showing your age there.
Sorry, yeah.
I was actually listening to Prince and Michael Jackson last night, weirdly enough.
They're just the best, aren't they?
Oh, so...
They are, sorry, I meant
Lewis Capaldi and all those things. Yeah, no, I grew up with a massive love of music and making music. And yeah, so like you say, I saw a friend who posted the other day about how she can't go and watch a musical without crying. And I'm the same. There's hardly a single musical I've seen where I don't burst into tears at some point, because music just has this incredible power to, I don't know, change something inside your soul. It's really weird how it can happen and different pieces move different people. But yeah, then I guess when you find the piece of music in a dance class that everyone is kind of feeling that, I don't know, the key's changing or its energy's building or it's got emotional lyrics, it can really, really, you know. And then if you're tired and you're pushing yourself quite hard in a dance class, I think that can mean that your emotions are quite high. Or like you say, Rada, if you're feeling a little bit nervous in a dance class, you've gone to a new class and everybody seems to know the routine and you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable, it can make you feel a bit emotional and a bit wobbly. So I think sometimes your emotions are running a bit high and then the music kicks in and you go, this is great, or this is making me tearful about something that's happened in my day, or I don't know.
Have you got...
What's amazing about you is that you use music, don't you, for sort of educational purposes. That sounds very serious. To educate children and young people, like a lot of the stuff that you do is combining music, creativity, the arts with knowledge and with skill building and all of it. I mean, you know, aside from the natural sort of skills built when we're dancing, like confidence, self-esteem and empathy and all that kind of stuff, you actually use music a lot in your work to kind of educate children and young people. And what's your view about how, I guess, do you think we're doing enough as a society to use the arts to educate children and to help children build like on who they are and their skill base?
I think we could do more. I always think there's room for more with the arts in schools. I don't always think it's as given as much attention as it deserves and for the amount of joy it can bring children. And, you know, Giles, you're in a band, aren't you? And, you know, the kind of writing music and having those technical skills and learning how music works so that you can produce something and, you know, a little tune that you've heard in your head, you can then transform it into something you can play on a piano or an instrument and then add another instrument and then add a different harmony. And then it sounds so full and you're going, I came up with that and it sounds good. I think understanding how it works, so teaching children about music and dancing and art and all of those creative subjects just arms them with the tools they need to be able to do something they're really proud of, and all those imaginative ideas that are buzzing around inside their minds, it's a way to then make them become a reality. Who posted the other day, literally sort of heart, what was it, something like 94% of creativity is just getting on with it, just getting started. And it is just doing it. And I think it is turning that little thought in your head of, oh, that's a nice melody, that could be a good song, getting on and writing the backing track and recording it. You know,
I think you're so right about teaching the various skills, you know, because, you know, I think with a generation that coming up with, you know, my kids are, you know, they call it digital natives, don't they? They're so in tune with technology.
Yeah.
And to be able to have those skills, like, I mean, you know, when I first was in bands and stuff, you would rely on going to a studio and there being a sound engineer who'd had 10 years of experience working with bands and stuff. Whereas you can do it from your home now. You can do it on your laptop. You know, we've, you know, got things like GarageBand and Logic and Pro Tools and all these different things that you can have on at your fingertips. And I think actually giving children those requisite skills at an early age that you know, if you are a creative person... And I'm not just talking about music, there are other things as well, like Photoshop and all that kind of stuff. You're into other type of creative things that you can learn very quickly and do stuff yourself very easily. You don't have to go into an expensive studio and spend hundreds of pounds. You can be doing it in your bedroom.
Yeah. And like, aren't children lucky in that way compared to when I was young. I'm not going to say anything about anyone else's age, but when I was young, it was difficult, you know, to record stuff. Not many people had equipment and things. It was too expensive, and they just, and it didn't do, the kit we did have didn't do very much, did it?
I had a four track, but it was a cassette one. Yeah, we did. It was a cassette. Yeah, it was rubbish.
Really?
Well, you know, like trying to bounce a track, like, so you could get, because obviously with a four track, you only got four tracks. So to try and bounce it down, so you got a stereo mix of your four tracks, so you could have another four tracks.
Yeah.
Or three tracks, actually, because it was only, the fourth track was taken up. It was a nightmare. Right. I never worked that out.
Yeah, it was. It was. And then when they had bigger track, like eight track recorder or whatever, then it was absolutely enormous. And where didn't it?
Yeah, so it could take up a whole room.
But, you know, I do remember as a child, when you first, you know, we had a microphone, we were very lucky in our house. We had a microphone and we had the four track recorder, and I'd go and I'd literally record the four tracks and I'd be able to kind of create music. And now, like you say, it's much easier for young people to be able to do it. So brilliant. Crack on, you know, making stop motion animation or all those things you can do on your phone now. It's wicked. You can edit a movie. You can make a movie in your garden, you know.
When I think, often, like, you know, I don't want to get too political, but the powers that be don't appreciate actually how much, not only does it do for individuals, fulfill them, but also actually how much that contributes to the economy. Yeah, you know, the creative industries are huge. And so, I don't know why it's always being overlooked, but let's not get too political.
No, you know, no, I completely agree. I completely agree.
Massively, though. I think what you're saying about how many things are now available and accessible for children, young people, or just any of us actually at home. Sometimes that can be a bit overwhelming, but I guess the key skill to, sort of like you were saying, Naomi, in terms of taking action, because sometimes there can be so much that you could do that you'll be like, oh my God, there's so much, where do I even start? But I guess the key skill to just starting that kind of action or taking action is, I suppose, curiosity. And we don't really talk much about kind of curiosity I don't think we frame it as a very important skill or attribute. I think curiosity kind of gets just forgotten about, really. People are like, oh, you're curious when you're little and then it stops. Or you're curious and you ask questions about things that we know the answers to. But what's your view on the link, I suppose, between curiosity and creativity?
Well, I think with children, they are so curious naturally, aren't they? And I think, like you say, maybe it's as we get older, we start to feel less curious because we don't want to look like we don't know what we're talking about and we don't look foolish. But by being curious, that's what does lead you to really, really exciting discoveries, isn't it? Whether that's in the natural world or whether that's at a piano or I think it's our curiosity as human beings is what's meant we've all achieved so much and made so many discoveries. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess you could say that all creative people are curious. Like we're always looking, whether it's in our, you know, in a particular field, like we'd be curious about how a note sounds or how two, like if we're talking about music, how notes blend together or how a harmony might work with that bit of music. Or if you're a writer, it's like, you know, you're curious about a particular subject and you delve into that. So I guess, you know, that's obviously just two examples, there's loads, but I think if all creatives, I guess, are curious to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think you're spot on.
Does that answer your question, Radha?
Yes, it does. I was thinking about Naomi's point about, you know, why sometimes we can lose our curiosity as we get older. And actually, I think you're so right that a lot of us stop being curious and stop asking questions because we're frightened about looking like we don't know what, you know, the answer to things. And as adults, we should know the answer to everything.
Just go home and Google it instead.
Yeah, exactly. Or sometimes we get frightened about being curious or asking why. Because we're not quite sure what we might find, or we might have to face something that we don't want to kind of look at as well. Like in our lives, I'm talking more generally about our lives, I suppose. You know, why is my life looking this way at this particular time? Why has this challenge come up for me? That sort of curiosity, I suppose, I'm looking at it in terms of like understanding yourself. And so if you look at, you know, if with any kind of problem in life or any challenge or any point in life, when you sit back and you go, what's going on here? That curiosity to learn about life, about how to sort of manage life, but also to learn about yourself. Like, who am I? You know, what makes me tick? What makes me happy? And is that in line with what the rest of the world is telling me I should be or not? So I think that curiosity and asking questions about ourselves and our lives is actually really key to evolving, I suppose, or progressing as people.
I think we're all, well, I don't know. All the people that I know are very curious about themselves and kind of trying to work out why they're doing what they're doing, and I don't know, overanalyze everything that they've done on a day-to-day basis and go, ooh. Do you think there are people that aren't curious about themselves?
I think probably everyone has an element of curiosity, but I sometimes wonder if more people maybe are shut down to that because it's a bit scary.
Right, yeah.
And if they were to sort of delve into that question, there might be answers which then might mean they'd have to change certain things in their lives, which is difficult and hard. So I think, I suppose, maybe sometimes I think, and we all have a tendency to do this, myself included, we're a bit like, actually, let's just put my hands over my ears and just pretend that's not quite happening because I'm not quite ready to deal with that.
Yeah.
So maybe fear, you know, fear of something can suffocate our sort of curiosity in terms of who we are potentially.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if we can tap into being curious, it is a way to open up a lot of doors for ourselves, isn't it? Especially if it's a subject that you literally know nothing about. I think it's that's what we should, that's what I don't do enough of in my life and I should be doing more of, is going, oh, I don't know enough about that. I will read a book about it. But do I? No, I end up watching something else on Netflix.
But it's interesting you're saying about, we've sort of touched on the being curious about yourself, and I think trying to work out what we ourselves like and what we that fills us up, I guess, or warms our heart. Like, we talked about things you're passionate about, but then, you know, if you think about your kind of authentic self, how you know, like, obviously dancing and music has always been a big part of your life, and how actually that is enriches you to this day. Is to kind of looking at that and knowing that that is something that you need in your life. And like the exercise, you sort of talked about that and how that is such a big part of your life as well and is important to you.
Yeah, and I think your theme for your podcast about, I think it sometimes is going back to those things that were so important to you in childhood, and you go, oh yeah, I used to do a lot of this as a kid, whether that's a sport or whatever it is. And you just go, oh, I used to actually love that. And then when you do dig it out, I think we did this over lockdown a bit, Radha, didn't we? We did about crafts and things.
Yeah,
kind of craft ideas and things that you go, oh, I haven't done this for years. And I really enjoyed through lockdown doing some making things that I hadn't done for ages. And I think you go back to those things that as a child brought you such happiness and you rediscover them. I mean, I bought a piano when I was in my 30s, probably. And when I got it, I was like, why have I not done this sooner? I love sitting at the piano. I'm not a brilliant piano player, but I absolutely love sitting trying to play a tune or trying to create a new song. And when I got my piano, I was like, what an idiot I am for not having bought this sooner, because it brought me such happiness. So I think sometimes then when you do rediscover things you used to love, it's brilliant. And you just go, well, at least I've done it now.
Well, I suppose we do sometimes rediscover these things when we most need them. You know, so, you know, I think you could sort of say, you know, because I'm the same. I'll be like, oh, why haven't I done this sooner? But actually, it was the right time to rediscover it, I guess, for me.
Yeah.
I was in a position where I needed that thing at that time, maybe.
And I think what you do a lot as a child, you're doing it a lot because it is something you're better at. You find that you mastered something or you did quite well in school at it. So I think it also then gives you that, I don't know, confidence boost or a bit of a, oh no, I'm actually quite good at this. This is something I did quite well because I did it a lot. So just, you know, as an effect of practicing it a lot, you got quite good at it.
I think that's true. I think as adults, we don't get many opportunities, or I don't think there are many opportunities where people say to us, well done, that was amazing. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, that's the one good thing about, you know, being a child on the whole, hopefully, yeah, is that you're getting people encouraging you, saying, well done, that's great, that's fantastic. You've got, you know, obviously, I mean, exams are exams, and I'm not saying they're wonderful things, but what they do give a little slight sense of, oh, what's next and what's next and what's next. And I think, and then that opportunity to be like, oh, well done, that's amazing, or well done for doing that, you did that really well. And I think as an adult, sometimes we don't get that many opportunities outside our friends and family for people to go, well done, that was amazing, that was really, really great. And that well done coming from just the pure sense of doing something well, as opposed to validation through income and money and salary, or followers on social media, yeah, or the other kind of slightly bizarre ways that we validate people and their worth and what they're doing. So I think that's actually a nice opportunity.
But I think,
like you said, Amy, to go back and remember that that was associated with people going, well done, that was great.
Yeah. And I think that's what you two as human beings both do unbelievably. You give out so much praise. Like, Josh, you'll always post a kind of, you should follow these people, they're fantastic. And you're like, you do say well done to people. You, both of you say thank you and are really appreciative of good things that you find in your life. And I try as a dance teacher now, you know, I think when you're a teacher or a parent, or, well, all of us have a responsibility, but, you know, when I've got a dance class with me doing Zumba, I feel it is my responsibility to try and send some praise out there and notice when people have achieved a step that they couldn't do before, or that they did particularly well, or they've got a good sweat on, or, you know, that something that they did made my day in the class. And so I think we all have the power, don't we, to say thank you and well done to other people. I think we just need to do it more, because you're right, we don't hear it enough as adults, but that's only because we've all stopped saying it to each other. And we do not crave it any less.
If anything, like you say, we crave it more. Yeah
and probably need it. And as confidence dips, you just, you know, and also how much in our lives anyone that says something positive to you, like praising up something that you did all through whatever age you were, they stick in your mind, you remember them, especially if they're said really genuinely and really heartfelt. In the same way you'll remember things that are negative and things that criticize you, those will stick as well. So that's why we have to be really careful what we say to people. But blimmin' heck, the positives stick. Yes. I can go back and I can remember things that I was told I was good at or that I did particularly well, and it's like, yes.
Yeah, if you can get the positive neuroplasticity is like what we're all striving for, really, isn't it? This word, it's a buzzword now, neuroplasticity.
Is it? Oh, I haven't even heard that.
It's like positive reinforcement. You keep saying things that get that, you know, you get enough of that, then it your brain actually will keep those pathways.
Oh, right.
Yeah. All the brain nerve cells kind of reconfigure to get that positive, like, little loop going, and then it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. And then you start believing it, and then the world's your oyster.
Yeah,
basically. Oh, Naomi, thank you so much, honestly, for coming on the podcast. I mean, as you demonstrate in your daily life, I think you have mentioned so many things that we forgot were good for us.
Yeah.
And that's actually just perfectly poignant, because that's like exactly who you are. It was like a
greatest hits of
it was. And I love that. And what you said before about not being put in a box was absolutely reflected in all of the chat today about all of the things that you brought up, because there are so many things in there. And you remind me a lot of myself and Giles, actually, in that sense of like variety and pick and mix and seeing the bigger picture and just being interested in everything and anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really
beautiful. Yeah, just say, don't be restricted. Don't feel restricted. If there's something you love doing, like cookery, or I don't know, something you haven't done for ages, just do it again. And you'll find it brings a massive smile to your face.
Absolutely. Thank you. What a joy. Thank you, Naomi. Thank you.
Really, really good to see you. And let's meet up and have a roast dinner together soon.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Definitely.
The end of another Things I Forgot Were Good For Me podcast episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope it's inspired you to go looking for all of the things that might help you feel a little bit better.
And hopefully we've inspired you to go looking for our podcast. You can find it on all good podcast platforms, probably some of the bad ones as well. You can also find us on social media. Our handle is Radha.
Yes, Giles, absolutely. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram
@forgotpodcast. So go and find us there. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week.